Hello all and welcome back to another episode here at the Damage Report, still under lockdown with a slightly lower level of the intro. We don't want to freak people out in the morning. Let me know what you think. Anyway, today's Tuesday and we're very lucky to be joined once again. There were many requests for the return of Viviana. How's it going?
Hi, Viviana, I cannot believe there were requests. Thank you.
There were, former host, also a current producer of the news show Maria on the El Rey Network. We are very glad to have you back.
Yes, thank you so much. And I was asking you right before we went live, is it okay if I, and now I'll ask you live, plug my new podcast / streaming show called Contextualize?
No, nope, it's not.
Too late.
Cut it. No, of course. Anything you want to.
Yeah, it's Contextualize This. It's a really great way to kind of look at some of our current issues through a historical lens, historical context. So I bring on an academic and try to have some fun with heavy issues like the school to prison pipeline.
That's a heavy one.
It's all across all platforms, so check it out. We just launched yesterday, soft launch, so I'd love for your fans to take a peek.
That is awesome. That is awesome. And let's remind them at the end. I'd also like to remind them now, if you're currently in the stream, and many of you are, please hit the like button. Let people know that the stream is on. You can tweet it out, spread it and all that, get more people in the comments, which we will, of course, be responding to between stories. If you send in super chats and tweets and, you know, chat on Twitch as well, we'll be taking a look at those too. Today is going to be a jam-packed session because we found a story that nobody knows about. Did you know that Donald Trump had an interview with Axios?
You know what sucks?
No, you didn't know that. Viviana, you didn't even know that.
I don't have HBO anymore. So. Mm-hmm. Thanks, but, Roku.
But the cool thing is, at least for this, they released it to everybody, and I sort of understand why. But anyway, so we're going to be dissecting a few bits of that. I was going through it and pulling time codes to pull out videos, and then I realized, oh, wait, no, I can't just have the whole thing. So we're going to be talking about a few different areas having to do with coronavirus and John Lewis and a whole bunch of different things. We've also got a massive explosion in Beirut. We're going to be talking about that a little bit later on. More police mistreatment, brutality. We've got that for you. Vaccines. Are they coming? And should they come? We'll be breaking that down. And maybe if there's time, we'll see. A new Midas Touch ad. The Progressive Pack has put on a new ad talking about Trump's relationship with female reporters. And it's something.
It's great. So it's fantastic.
It is. I think he likes them. But anyway, and with that, let me make sure that I'm not missing anything. To the team, I think something is supposed to be in here that I was reminded about yesterday, but I could be wrong. Often am. And with that, why don't we jump into the first story? Donald Trump was interviewed recently by Axios, and the entire interview now is available. You can watch it on YouTube, and you should, but let's talk about a few different parts of it. The first has to do with his coronavirus strategy. How seriously is he taking it? Here is a bit from that portion of the interview.
In China, we were doing good. Then all of a sudden, the game changed, and I had to close it down. I closed down the greatest economy ever in history. And then I closed it down, and now we're opening it. And we saved, by the way, by closing it down, we saved millions of lives. If we would have gone the herd, and we knew very little about the disease. If we would have gone herd, we would have lost millions of people, millions of people. One person's too much. We're at 140,000 people. One person is too much. We're at 140. We would have lost millions of people. And those people that really understand it, they really understand it, they said it's incredible, the job.
Okay. He tries to get him to explain who are these people that tell him he did a great job. And I love the, it's not like I'm a great, like, huge fan of John this one or whatever, but he's like, look, I got to master that. That's my Halloween costume coming up. Okay, so there's a few parts of that, Viviana, that we're going to have to break down. But what did you think about that bit and overall his talk about the pandemic during this interview?
Well, I want to start off by just telling everybody out there who's dealing with this on a personal level, my condolences are with you. My heart is with these families that are suffering. And it's really hard because, you know, I get frustrated when I see interviews like this and I laugh because he's so comical and ridiculous. And like, we're just laughing about Jonathan's faces. And this is like, this is heavy stuff. Somehow Trump is always talking about this group of people that are experts and everybody. I want to know who these people are. Mm-hmm. There's this group of people, a sample size group that Trump refers to constantly, and we never know who they are. Mm-hmm. Trump, yeah. Jonathan tries to get to the bottom of it in this interview a couple of times.
Well, of course, there's no There's no bottom, or I should say we're in the bottom already, like, because there's no people. There's no people. And it seems like sometimes people can be so flawed that you seem crazy to identify what they're doing. So if I tell you, oh no, Donald Trump just goes through life and whenever he feels pressure or criticism, he just makes up people that are impressed with him and then talks about those people. That sounds crazy because normal people can't imagine doing that. Like if I told you, you know, I'm writing this book right now and you know, I gave it to some people and they said it's literally the best book that they've ever read. You would have to assume that's true because the alternative is insane. But yeah. That is that's the world we're in. People are not telling me did an amazing job. Maybe Stephen Miller, you know, yeah. is telling me did a great job. Maybe that not technically a person,
honestly,
but
Stephen Miller is an evil SOB, but he also knows that Trump's an idiot.
I think so. Yes.
He's aware. Because he's not a dumb person, Stephen Miller.
Yeah, he's just evil.
Right.
Evil. Yes. And so to the content of what was talked about in that, he says a few things that are wrong. One, that it was just sent over by China. And he talks earlier about how we cut off the travel, which obviously, thank God he did that because we haven't had a pandemic here because of that. As Jonathan Swan pointed out, it was already here, you ignoramus. Right. He didn't say that, but he thought it. And then Trump goes on to talk about what he has done. He saved millions of lives. So Nice. He will always seem like a success if the alternative is that literally nothing was done. Right. But the third thing is he said that the doing nothing is the going herd. That's the president of the United States saying going herd. And what he's referring to there is the idea that we can develop herd immunity by simply allowing enough people to get sick and to develop antibodies so that they will be resistant or immune to the virus, which again, we don't even know is true in this virus. But the biggest issue with that is, who was suggesting that we should go herd?
This has been a huge talking point on the right, the extreme right. I mean, this since the beginning of the pandemic, and they look to Sweden. Sweden's going herd. Well, a lot of the herd is dead in Sweden. And yeah. I mean, this you make sacrifices of people's lives just to see what happens. And then these are the same people, if we get to the vaccine stuff, these are the same people that are like, I'm not going to risk it, but you're willing to let other people die.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So we can get your herd immunity.
Exactly. And look, when you know, they were freaking out about Sweden in the beginning and people in Sweden, medical professionals were saying, I don't know if this is a really good idea. I was worried about it then. Then it turned out that, look, has Sweden done better than us? Yes. There are some very good reasons for that. Sweden has 7 people in it. That's right. One of them. But Sweden is also surrounded by other countries that did better because they didn't go herd.
And they did a lockdown. Good
exactly. They did a lockdown. So they look better compared to us. They look worse compared to other countries around them. But I really want to drive this home. The whole him saying, look, I could have gone herd, but I didn't to get credit now is even more insane when you realize that he was the one that was pushing for it. I've read this graphic like 10 times now. During one task force meeting in the Situation Room last month, this is way back in the beginning of the pandemic, Trump turned to Dr. Fauci and challenged him. Trump wanted to understand why talk of herd immunity, going herd, allowing the coronavirus to sweep a nation largely unchecked with the belief that those who survived would then be immune, was such a bad idea. And he said in particular, why don't we let this wash over the country? According to 2 different people who were in the meeting, he raised that question repeatedly in the Oval Office, by the way. Fauci initially seemed confused by the term wash over because Fauci is a regular person who's not insane, but became alarmed once he understood what Trump was asking. And he responded, Mr. President, many people would die. Yes, those millions that Trump is now bragging he saved, he was suggesting should die to follow a strategy that would have been apocalyptic even if it worked, but because of the nature of coronavirus antibodies, probably wouldn't have even resulted in immunity afterward.
Absolutely. We don't even know yet. That's the thing.
We don't.
And if he's so keen on going herd, why are you getting tested all the time? Why are you making sure everybody's getting tested around you? Why don't you just get it to get your immunity since you believe in it so much? It's very, very duplicitous. And, you know, not that I'm shocked, but it's upsetting when there's so many people dying. I mean, like Jonathan said, 1,000 people.
Exactly.
I mean, it's just, and he, yeah. You know, I don't know if we're going to get to that part of the interview.
The
but
dying,
he said,
we will.
Yeah.
He's obviously, Jonathan Swan was critical in the interview, but he was like also, They were tough questions only because Trump never faces questions that tough, and also because Trump has done a terrible job making the questions tough because they're about material he's already flubbed. But he's trying to help him. Like, how many olive branches? He just came loaded with olive branches that he was holding out to him.
The only time that Trump actually stopped and was listening for 2 seconds, because he was talking over him the whole interview.
Yes.
It was when he was telling him how he gets massive crowds, and I followed you, and Trump was on every word. He wanted to hear everything he had. And that was the only time.
Exactly. Donald Trump decided not too long ago to have his big Tulsa rally that has had disastrous and predicted results. And so here he is being asked about that decision.
Last time I was with you was the day before your Tulsa rally in the Oval. And, you know, you were saying big, huge crowd. It was indoors.
By the way,
these people, they listen to you.
Excuse me, Jennifer.
Yeah.
We had a 19,000-seat stadium. First of all, we had 12,000 people, not 6,000, which you reported, another paper reported. But you couldn't even get in. It was like an armed camp.
Why would you have wanted that?
Because they had 120 Black Lives Matter people
there. I understand, but why would you have wanted
and
a huge
Tulsa,
crowd?
Excuse me, wait. And Tulsa, well, because that area was a very good area at the time. It was an area that was
cases
pretty much over after a month later, it started going up. That's a month later.
Okay, so there are two great parts there. I mean, I think we should acknowledge that, one, the cases were going up in advance of it, at least a little bit. But let's say that that's wrong, as he implies. And he says after we had the massive rally that people say would cause a spread of cases, then the cases started spreading, is a really interesting actually self-own there.
That's what I was, yeah.
Yeah,
he acknowledges it. He acknowledges it. But even if... the fact that you thought, I mean, the way he talks is crazy. It was over. Like, be specific what you're saying. I don't even know what you're saying. That happens many times in this interview where Jonathan's like, what? What manuals? What books? What people? Mm-hmm. Even if the numbers were low, even if there, you know, it was still a pandemic, even if it was relatively safe there, as he's sort of alluding to, why would you have a massive rally?
Yeah.
And you have to acknowledge that that did play into the numbers rising. I mean, it's just, that's science. I like how he said, there's another part of the interview. He's like, it's science. I was like, really? Yeah. He knows about science?
Well, but he describes science as, and boom, all of a sudden it's better. That's what he says science is.
All of a sudden things change in a drop of a hat.
Yeah.
That's science.
That's not science in my experience. But yeah, you're right. So he's bragging about having the big rally, and we're going to get to the ratings in a second, but he is talking to a guy that is, like somebody said during the video, was that John sighing or the interviewer? And I think it was both of us. So he's being told by this interviewer, it was irresponsible for you to do that, to put so many people there. But he can't help himself. He's like, no, I had twice as many people as you're saying is irresponsible. Which would be more irresponsible.
I was even more irresponsible than you're claiming. He reminds me of a teenager that got home drunk from a party and is trying to negotiate and argue with their parents.
Yeah. And he doesn't know what point he's trying to make. It's also a lie. It wasn't 12,000. It was 6,000. But 6,000 is bad enough. That's what we're discussing. The horrible decision that led to, in your words, a spread of cases. And also, Herman Cain has died. Again, we don't know for sure that he died as a result of that. But it certainly seems like an interesting coincidence.
It does.
And then beyond that, you mentioned the fact that he loves to hear about how great it was and all that. Well, he also loves to talk about how great it was. So here is more. Again, he is being asked a series of questions about the spread of cases, hospitalizations, deaths, the fact that things are going really poorly and that he made a bad decision with Tulsa. Here is how he decides to spin it.
But
we had 12,000 people. It was incorrectly reported. The other thing we had that nobody wants to talk about, so Fox broadcast it. It was the highest rating in the history of Fox television Saturday night. It was the highest rating.
Mr. President.
My speech, well, wait a minute, you're saying something.
Yeah.
That speech was the highest rated speech in the history of Fox television on Saturday night. And nobody says that.
Why aren't they focusing on the ratings?
Talking about the ratings, John. This is what's important. I don't care that 1,000 people are dying a day. My ratings are good.
Mm-hmm. You know, I don't know if this is a crazy analogy or not. So he's talking about something that's being described before and now in hindsight as a disaster to public health. And he's talking about, but yeah, the ratings. It would be like if like FDR was like, yeah, you know, day that'll live in infamy. We lost a lot of ships, but that footage is real playing well on the news. Nobody cares. That might be the infamy. Exactly. Yeah. Ratings that will. That might be the craziest thing. I know we're going to get to another thing that he said that people are like, this should be the takeaway. How could you say like something like this and still be president? But him bragging about ratings for some stupid speech. How could you possibly care about that with people dying? So many people dying.
All he cares about. He doesn't care about people dying. He never has. He has never treated people humanely, except for people that can do something for him.
Yeah.
And then when they can't anymore, I mean, it's not even, people talk about how Trump's not a racist. He is, but he also just is a totally inconsiderate person. Mm-hmm. That's me being nice. Because even if somebody is white, once they can't do anything more for him, he's done with them.
Yeah.
He's done. Yeah. So this guy is just total narcissist. We really have a problem in this country that so many people, and Jonathan refers to that when he's trying to sort of plead with him about how it was such bad advice, bad, you know, planning on his part as a leader to talk to all these people and discourage mask wearing and you know, being scofflaws to all of the regulations in their own cities and states. You know, this guy could care less about anyone. He doesn't care if we all die. Honestly, I think he thinks he's immortal. Apparently he is, because he sure lives a risky life, but.
Yeah. No, I mean, if your worldview places you always at the center, and that's going to appear in other videos we're going to show, including the John Lewis one, that everything is about you. It's a sociopathic life. You can't imagine a universe continuing without you because you're the point of this whole thing.
You are everything.
Exactly. Talking about the ratings is madness. The only way that could possibly play with his base is if his base has been successfully brainwashed to think this isn't a real pandemic, the numbers aren't real, I'm in no danger. And unfortunately, that's millions of Americans.
And they have.
Yeah, they have. I have been wanting to see Donald Trump, with his new tone, at least pretend to care about the fact that 158,000 plus people have died. Well, he was asked about those deaths. And here is how he chose to talk about it. A phrase that, like we were talking about earlier, should probably live in infamy.
You know, I've covered you for a long time. I've gone to your rallies. I've talked to your people. They love you. They listen to you. They listen to every word you say. They hang on your every word. They don't listen to me or the media or Fauci. They think we're fake news. They want to get their advice from you. And so when they hear you say everything's under control, don't worry about wearing masks. I mean, these are people, many of them are older people,
what's
Mr. President.
What's your definition of control? Yeah. Under the
it's giving them a false sense
right
of security.
Now, I think it's under control. I'll tell you what.
How? 1,000 Americans are dying a day.
They are dying. That's true. And it is what it is. But that doesn't mean we aren't doing everything we can. It's under control as much as you can control it. This is a.
It is what it is.
It's shameful.
That's what you say about, like, a cake when you didn't really nail the recipe. Not 1,000 plus deaths a day. After we had gotten the numbers down below 1,000. And, looks like our strategy sucked, and now we're losing 1,000 people again every single day. It is what it is.
Yeah, shame on you, President Trump. Shame on you, Donald Trump. It's disgusting what you just said. And you really, I don't know why any of his staff lets him speak in public, honestly.
I mean,
he really just...
I doubt there will be many interviews in the near future because he had that disastrous one about the, you know, man, woman, person, camera, TV or whatever. Sorry, maybe I got it in the wrong order. Guess I'm going crazy.
If I had been Jonathan Swan, I would have put him on the spot. I'd be like, could you do it again? I bet you he couldn't have done it again.
Okay, that would have been kind of funny. But what if he had gotten it right? But anyway.
Like, you're a genius.
Exactly. And then this interview, that it is what it is. Imagine George W. Bush, like 9/12. It is what it is, you know? We tried to stop it. I guess we did our best. Or FDR. Or whatever. Honestly, remember, like, the furor over Benghazi that runs up until literally Fox News was talking about it last night? I swear to God. Look it up.
I saw some of it. Yeah.
Exactly. Yesterday, we had more than 250 Benghazis worth of Americans die. Like, all told through the pandemic, it's in the tens of thousands of Benghazis. And there was a noted, no, it is what it is vibe from the right about that. But man, it's like a couple of deaths. It's the biggest tragedy that we've ever had. Clearly, no, it is a tragedy that the people died. It's not the biggest political scandal ever. This is the biggest domestic political crisis we have had in a century, perhaps. And it is what it is. That is going to be and needs to be clipped out. and put in a million ads. I'm sure we'll be playing some of them on the show. You don't get to talk about this quantity of death, this massive mountain of dead Americans, and say, hey, it is what it is. We're doing our best. What are you going to do?
Flippant. And, you know, I'm not sure if you were the one that sent me this, John, about Benghazi and about Hillary Clinton. Not that I ever go in Hillary's corner, but in this case, it's a good example. When she was being interviewed, they were talking about pretty much who orchestrated the strike, so some sort of details of what happened with Benghazi. And at one point she said, what difference does it make in regards to who started it, right? Mm-hmm. The right took that clip, yes. And then that was the talking point. What difference does it make? What difference about these soldiers who died? And that wasn't the context in which she said it. But this is the context in which he said it.
Yeah.
Are they going to hold him to the same point?
You're 100% right. Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. They put that in ads and all of that. Yeah, I can't believe it. But then, you know, we're reminded of the sort of president that we have.
We need to talk about a relatively new show called the Republic, or UNFTR. As a Young Turks fan, you already know that the government, the media, and corporations are constantly peddling lies that serve the interests of the rich and powerful. But now there's a podcast dedicated to unraveling those lies, debunking the conventional wisdom. In each episode of the Republic, or UNFTR, the host delves into a different historical episode or topic that's generally misunderstood or purposely obfuscated by the so-called powers that be, featuring in-depth research, razor-sharp commentary, and just the right amount of vulgarity. The UNFTR podcast takes a sledgehammer to what you thought you knew about some of the nation's most sacred historical cows. But don't just take my word for it. The New York Times described UNFTR as consistently compelling and educational, aiming to challenge conventional wisdom and upend the historical narratives that were taught in school. For as the great philosopher Yoda once put it,
you must unlearn what you have learned.
And that's true whether you're in Jedi training or you're uprooting and exposing all the propaganda and disinformation you've been fed over the course of your lifetime. So search for UNFDR in your podcast app today and get ready to get informed, angered, and entertained all at the same time.
Donald Trump was being interviewed about the coronavirus deaths, and he came prepared, not mentally or with a plan, but with paper.
The figure I look at is death. And death is going up now. Okay, and it's 1,000 a day.
If you look at death...
Yeah, it's going up again.
Let's look.
Daily death.
Take a look at some of these charts.
I'd love to.
We're going to look.
Let's look.
And if you look at death...
Yeah. It started to go up again.
One. Well, right here, the United States is lowest in numerous categories. We're lower than the world.
Lower than
we're
the
lower
world?
We're lower than Europe.
In what? In what?
Take a look. Right here. Here's case death.
Oh, you're doing death as a proportion of cases. I'm talking about death as a proportion of population. That's where the U.S. is really bad.
Well,
much worse than South Korea, Germany, etc.
You can't do that. You have to go by where... Look, here is the United States. You have to go by the cases. The cases...
Why not as a proportion of population?
When we have somebody... What it says is when you have somebody that has it, where there's a case, the people that live from those cases.
It's surely a relevant statistic to say if the U.S. has X population and X percentage of death of that population versus South Korea.
No, you have to go by the cases.
Well, look at South Korea, for example. 51 million population, 300 deaths. It's crazy compared to...
You don't know that.
I do. It's
you
on the,
don't know
it's,
that.
You think they're faking their statistics? South Korea?
An advanced country? I won't get into that because I have a very good relationship with the country. But you don't know.
He is asserting there without saying
just a minute,
it, that South
John.
Korea...
Just a minute.
Wait, but what's on those? Are there charts?
Take a look at this. Who handles papers like that?
Somebody who hates things written down, who hates information, is deeply suspicious of it. I trust you with that material more. He's implying that South Korea has hidden hundreds of thousands of deaths. He's implying that it's worse. Him bringing out those papers, it's like, hey, do you watch Always Sunny in Philadelphia?
Yes.
Okay. You know, the classic scene with Charlie and he's got the, his big chart, the Pepe Silvia thing where he's like, he's got lines drawn and he's trying to figure something out. Maybe you don't. It's
I
like
haven't seen that part, but like beautiful mind strings it's everywhere.
Exactly. It's like, what if you didn't know anything about science, the scientific method, how to investigate hypotheses, but you wanted to look like you did. And so you got some of the props, but okay, you don't know it, and you're deeply suspicious of it. So you just got some charts printed out with big fat bars, and you don't even know what it says. You wouldn't actually, you'd be able to fool other idiots with that, but you wouldn't be able to fool intelligent people. And that is what we're seeing in this interview.
And Jonathan is that smartass from high school that was like, oh, you're doing this. I'm talking about this. And then you're like, oh, owned. Mm-hmm. He owned him. He owned him right there. I feel like Jonathan was trying his best to not be an a-hole, but
he was
sort of necessary. It was because Trump was just talking out of his hoo-ha.
Yeah. He's doing... Because he wants to get another interview, but that's not, like, usually I say that to be, like, they're going super soft. He's not going super soft, but he is doing the voice of, like, but no, you need to, like, come on. Like, he's trying to, like you would do to a puppy. He's doing puppy voice to Trump there. And I guess he has to, because Trump apparently seems to like Jonathan Swan, but Jonathan Swan is asking tough enough questions, you know, for the American context. Yeah. So I guess it's a good strategy.
Yeah, he did a pretty good job considering who he is. Mm-hmm. So I thought he did ask some important questions. I just feel like when you aren't good at math, being someone who's terrible at math, don't start acting like you could go head to head with somebody who's probably a genius in Jonathan's level comparison wise. Why would you try to debate about statistics? You know, it doesn't make any sense. And then why say that you can't measure deaths by population rate? Why can't you do that? Why is that not? Because it makes me look bad. We can only use the statistics that make me look good.
I have a book. It's in this book. You can't do that. It's in the book.
There's a whole lot of people that say you can't do that.
And so, look, here's the thing. So we often say that we have done worse than other countries, which, when I say it, I can't speak for everyone, is supposed to light a fire under people to want our government to do better. Okay, that's what it means. What it doesn't mean is, if we were doing exactly what we're doing right now, but other countries were doing worse, that I'd be satisfied. But all of what he just said implies, I just need to trick you into thinking that other people have it worse, and then what we've got will be okay. No. 1,000 people dying a day will never be okay. I don't care if we're the last country on Earth. Okay, and everyone else is wiped out. It's unacceptable. And it's particularly unacceptable when I'm watching you throw papers around and talk about bleach, and that's how you've spent 5 months. That's what makes it unacceptable. 1,000 people a day is not acceptable. I don't care what stupid chart you try to show me.
Acceptable. And anything you're... I have never seen a president speak like this about such a grave situation. You mentioned George W. the other day, like, who would have known we'd be longing for that sort of professionalism and leadership?
Yeah.
I mean,
in terms of rhetorical style, I guess. Yes. Yeah. Absolute disaster. It caused deaths of hundreds of thousands. But yeah, he pretended to have empathy. Trump just doesn't have it in him. He cannot pretend to care about this. He said at one point in that quote, one death is a tragedy. I think were his exact words. I got nothing off of that. No emotion. It's a line. And I guess him giving the line is better than nothing, but it's not the same as actual empathy.
Well, the numbers that Dr. Fauci and Dr. What's her last name? Briggs?
Burks.
Blank on her name. The numbers of the 2.2 million that they gave him in the beginning was meant to really, like, kind of sober him up. But now he's holding on to that number like, I didn't reach that, so I did pretty good. He is a D-minus student that celebrates not getting an F.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Hypothetically, I could have gotten 0 points. So look at me now. Yeah.
Put it on the fridge. D minus.
Put it on the fridge. During the Axios interview, Donald Trump was asked about the passing of John Lewis and what he thought about his legacy. Buckle up.
John Lewis is lying in state in the U.S. Capitol. How do you think history will remember John Lewis?
I don't know. I really don't know. I don't know. I don't know John Lewis. He chose not to come to my inauguration. He chose, I never met John Lewis, actually, I don't believe.
Do you find him impressive?
I can't say one way or the other. I find a lot of people impressive. I find many people not impressive, but no, but I didn't go.
Do you find his story impressive?
He didn't come to my inauguration. He didn't come to my State of the Union speeches, and that's okay, that's his right. And again, nobody has done more for black Americans than I have.
I understand.
He should have come. But I think he made a big mistake.
Taking your relationship with him out of it, do you find his story impressive, what he's done for this country?
He was a person that devoted a lot of energy and a lot of heart to civil rights, but there were many others also.
I have done more for black people than anyone else. He kind of has. Not good things.
Yeah, that's true. He's done
so
stuff.
So he's not wrong. Put it on the fridge.
So I don't know why that answer gets me more than any of the other answers. When he says, you know, I don't know him, I haven't met him, and then Jonathan Swan gives him, okay, do you find him impressive? And he goes, if I had been Jonathan Swan, I hope nobody's listening, I would have rushed him. Like, that tongue cluck that he does, the thinking about it, how am I going to weasel out of this? I would have rushed him, and the interview would have been over, I'd be in jail, I guess. And that's why I'm not allowed in these rooms, because...
I'm glad you weren't there, because it's not worth going to jail for that guy.
I'm right now, on the formats we're on, I can't say what I want to say, like, swear-wise. That, just insert whatever you want.
He's a mother scratcher.
He is. I don't know him.
A mother scratcher.
I haven't met him. Yeah, I think lots. I've never met Greta. She's impressive, you know? And if she didn't come to my party, that speaks well of her. Okay?
How he never met MLK. That doesn't stop him from touting MLK all the time.
Mm-hmm.
He hasn't met
Gandhi.
Right. Yeah. It's just convenient. What about Gandhi? Does he hate Gandhi? Never met him. Gandhi didn't go to his 20th birthday party. He could have went.
He brought up. It was like, I don't know him. I haven't met him. He didn't come to my inauguration.
How did he bring that up?
How could you be so small? How could you be this pathetic? How could you be this fundamental? There is just, if you were to break him open, it would just be mold and fungus. That is all that is inside of him. He is so fundamentally wrong and broken. So
he's
pathetic.
Just really a sensitive person, because that really hurt you, huh?
It must have.
But you had so many people at your inauguration, more than anybody in the world has ever had.
Mm-hmm.
But that one person wasn't there, and it just really got you.
It was years ago. Years ago. And then...
The man died. He's dead. You can't give him respect? What were you going to say, John? Sorry.
He can't. No. I'm glad
you
said
ago.
That.
It was years ago, and what?
Yeah, it was years ago, and okay, so they finally pushed through. It's like, is he impressive? Well, you know, he was a person who gave a lot of heart, and I was like, okay, no, this is going in a better direction. He gave a lot of heart for civil rights, but lots of other people did.
Jeez. Why qualify it? To someone who just passed away, dedicating their entire lives to the fight and the struggle for civil rights and equality.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And to uplift our black citizens and brothers and sisters and give them the equity and respect that they deserve.
Yeah.
Why qualify that statement? You don't need to.
Because he can't. He can't respect a person for the life that he had. And what he gave, and the fact that he took that activism and all of that, and then he turned it into a career in politics, trying to serve people.
You know who he's talking about when he says so many other people have too? He's talking about himself, because he thinks he's done more than anyone else for black people.
That's true.
So of course it's more than you know, Representative Lewis, because he has to beat everybody. Yeah. He's better than anyone.
Well, by the way, okay, well, he just provided a convenient little out to some of the national debates we've been having. So John Lewis, sure, did a lot of impressive stuff, but other people did. So we don't have to recognize him, don't have to respect him, don't have to remember him. Okay, well, then all of those Confederate statues, those were great racists doing everything they could to advance white supremacy. But lots of other people were. There were a lot of racists who were trying to kill so that they could keep people in bondage. So we really don't have to recognize them, because lots of people really did.
There's lots. I love it. I'm back that 100%. And I don't think you're going to show this clip of it when he asks him about renaming the bridge, because there's been a big push to rename the Edmonds Bridge.
The Pettus Bridge.
Pettus Bridge, Edmund Pettus. And he was okay with it. Yeah, yeah, that's fine. That's fine. So flip it.
I was surprised that he was okay with it. I thought he'd say no. Like,
if the people want it. Okay, well, we want you out of office too. How about that? Yeah. Since you're just doing what we like.
True, you're just handing out what we want. Civil rights protests continue in cities around the country. Donald Trump was asked about this and about Black Lives Matter during the Axios interview. Has he met with them?
Mr. President, have you ever met with a Black Lives Matter activist to hear them out, hear their arguments?
Well, Black Lives Matter started off to me very badly because it was...
Did you ever meet with one?
Pigs in a blanket, burn them like bacon. That was the first time I ever heard of Black... That was 3-4 years ago. Uh-huh. Pigs, meaning policemen, pigs is what they're referring to, in a blanket, fry them like bacon. I thought it was... So I got off to a bad start. I got off to a very bad start.
Meet with a Black Lives Matter activist?
I would, but I think right now when they paint...
Why haven't you?
When they paint the sign, nobody's asked for a meeting, right? I've never been... Nobody's ever asked me for a meeting.
So he doesn't have to do anything. He doesn't have to extend anything, any reforms, any changes, any understanding. And because in one video... One individual of one of the affiliated groups of BLM, I don't even know what year it was that this happened, said that one thing that he misquoted, he doesn't have to listen to them. That is the standard that we will now hold all social movements to.
Just as a note, you don't fry pigs in a blanket. You would bake them. But
was fry, but yeah, that's true.
You fry them like bacon.
You'll mess up the recipe if you do it that way.
I mean, I'm vegan, so I don't go that way anyway, but yeah. It's,
yeah.
The right has been so against Black Lives Matter, and it's not just the right. I'll say establishment mm-hmm. Democrats mm-hmm. as well. Mm-hmm. Someone needs to tell them that McCarthyism is over. We don't have to be afraid of Marxism. We don't have to be afraid of socialism. They're not bad words, and they don't make people evil or terrorists just because they say it. And they're trying to pull back this whole like 1950s rhetoric, and I'm over it. Like, I don't care. You know, you're saying that this organization does this and that, that's why it's bad. And they think that's going to scare people into the dark. Like, oh, I don't want to be part of Black Lives Matter. They follow some tenets of Marxism. Mm-hmm. Yeah, because capitalism is effing up our country. So I'm glad that there's an organization doing this, but I'm not sure if Black Lives Matter has ever reached out to the White House. I'm sure somebody in some activist group related has, but I don't know what purpose it would be to even talk to him.
Yeah, I mean, the thing is, like, by the way, that's Antifa talk from her. Terrorist, look her up, lock her up. But anyway, no, I'm kidding. That's what they're doing. They're just, you know, you don't have to listen to anyone you don't like. And he talks about how Portland is just filled with anarchists and Antifa. It's not protesters. You don't have to worry about it. They don't have any legitimate grievances. It's just violent terrorism. And so he's off the hook. And all of his followers are also off the hook. He doesn't have to make any changes. They get to go on being racist. It's a great system that they've set up. But imagine that. Imagine months of nationwide protests. And the most powerful individual in the country doesn't even have to pretend that he's going to listen to their arguments, let alone ever change anything. It's never going to happen. You're 100% right. There's no point in meeting with him because it's never going to happen under him. He's not going to do anything. The more protests there are,
I'll go as far as to say it won't happen under Biden either.
Yeah, I think some reforms will happen. I doubt a significant portion of what's being asked for. The police are not being defunded nationally or anything like that. That's not happening. I doubt he's taking out DHS or abolishing ICE or fundamentally changing Border Patrol or anything like that. Yeah, yeah.
But one thing that he said during that bit of the interview, too, where he was talking about why they were unlabeled, uniformed officers kidnapping people. And this is something that I've heard a lot in regards to police brutality and, you know, about the safety of cops. And of course, I don't want anybody, I'm anti-violence. I don't want anybody to get hurt or killed. But when we are putting the safety of cops over the safety of our own citizens, I mean, these cops sign up to be in these dangerous positions. So mm-hmm. they already know they're taking a risk. Why do they need to be, and they can label themselves without putting Lopez or whatever their name is. That sort of argument of we need to protect our military and our cops before our own citizens. It's just boggling that we even got to this point and that he is looking at what is going on in his own country that he is supposedly the leader of and seeing veterans you know, beaten up, mothers pepper sprayed, pregnant women pepper sprayed. I mean, just
he called that he called that fake news in that interview.
And Antifa. That's what he called them.
Yeah. Well, but he said that, like, when Jonathan Swan mentioned the Navy vet getting beaten, he said that's fake news.
Yeah,
making very clear that when he uses the term fake news, he doesn't mean that it didn't happen. He means, no, you don't get to talk about that. You have to talk about the part that I want to talk about. It has to be positive towards me. Exactly, yeah. Exactly. You don't get to do that. So it is a crazy situation that we've ended up in with him. But I do have an idea about why we're in that situation. And it has to do with his view of systemic racism. And here he is.
Oh, Mr. President, that many police treat black people differently from white people.
Well, I hope not. I hope not. Certainly
you've seen the statistics.
The knee on the neck was a disgrace, okay?
Yeah.
It was a disgrace.
I'm talking about, what does systemic racism mean to you?
I hope the answer to that question is no. Does anybody really answer that question accurately?
But what about not hope? What about analysis? What's your cold-hearted view of
it? I have seen where there is a difference, and I don't want there to be a difference. I don't like that there would be a difference. But with that being said,
why do you think black men are 2.5 times
white people?
I know, but why do you think black
in
men
in a larger number
in quantity
have killed
but,
white
but
people?
But why do you think black men are 2.5 times more likely to be killed by police than white?
That I don't know, but
why?
I don't,
why do you
I don't like it.
But you must have thought
why?
About it.
Why? I don't know why, but I don't like it. I do know this.
Does it speak to something systemic?
Police have killed many white people also.
But proportionally, what is?
So that thing from a couple weeks ago, that more white people. More white people. That's just a standard talking point that he has right now.
Yeah.
And he, when asked what systemic racism was, started to bumble and then said, does anyone know how to answer that question? Yeah, I think a lot of people do.
There's a few people that are experts in it and have been trying to for decades, but okay.
Yeah.
You know, he talks about George Floyd's murder being heinous, and it is. And a lot of the right has talked, because it's undeniable. It was execution in the street. I mean, it was a public lynching. But they act like it's a one-off. I don't think we're going to have time today to go to the video about what happened to the family in Aurora, Colorado. But we're seeing it every... I mean, it's just countless. Well, it's just, this is not ending. And I'm not surprised that he's not acknowledging this. This has been his whole thing. And it's the thing of the right. And I have family members who don't believe in white privilege. They don't believe in systemic racism. They don't believe in anything. It's just because those statistics don't fit their bill.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's how science works.
And there's a lot of weak... white people, especially white men, that think acknowledging any of that means that you are the worst person possible, that nothing you do or have ever done matters. It is like you're just deleted somehow.
Why can't we all remove ourselves personally from the horrendous inequality that we've had in this system? I mentioned it on the show when I was there last. Like, I believe that we were all raised in America as white supremacists. So we need to stop getting defensive when things like this happen. We don't think you're responsible for slavery, but you are responsible for pretending it didn't affect us for generations afterwards. Mm-hmm. That's what we're responsible for. And that's what we need to change.
Yeah.
So this defensive behavior, oh, well, white people, well, all lives matter. Well, blue lives matter. Let's talk about what is happening right in front of us. Instead of trying to make excuses, we are all part of it as a collective, have suffered trauma from the horrendous history we have of genocide of Native Americans. I mean, to start off with, and then we have slavery that we had to still on our shoulders. And Trevor Noah was talking about, you know, part of apartheid was like they needed to talk about it afterwards. And that was like part of how they healed. And we don't do that here.
Yeah. Yeah.
We
just want to pretend. And the thing is, if you were born, you know, 100 plus years after slavery, it seems to make sense that you were not individually responsible for it. But if there are lingering effects that need to be changed, and you refusing to take stock with what was done and continues to be done, if that stops that change, then you become responsible for that.
Exactly right.
Like many people, I discovered this morning on Twitter trending a massive, incredibly disturbing video of an explosion going on in Beirut. And I want to show you a few of the early angles, and we're going to work through what it appears actually happened. But here is some of the footage that was so shocking.
Thank you.
Wow. And so you can see there the mushroom cloud-esque expansion circle. You have the shockwave literally shattering windows relatively far away. I can only imagine if I was one of those individuals living in Beirut, you must have thought, no, we've been struck by some sort of massive weapon.
Yeah, that's scary. Even to watch it is scary.
It's horrifying. Yeah, I've seen tons of video. There's a lot of angles out there because there had been a fire for a while before the explosion, so people were filming it.
Oh.
People, yeah, we're gonna talk a little bit about that. But people like wanting to film it, and then this massive explosion seemingly coming out of nowhere, shattering the glass around them, them falling, their cameras turning off. Like, it must have been terrifying at the time. Now, the earliest word I saw was from Lebanon's state-run news agency saying a large explosion in Beirut was the result of a fire at a warehouse for firecrackers. Now, I have been talking about international news for long enough.
What?
What's that?
It reminds me of a Simpsons episode or something.
It does. It's a tragedy in this case, but it seemed way too clean. And that seems like the sort of story that is put out. However, as I noted here, I don't have sources in Beirut, but I have a source that has sources in Beirut, and they confirm that it is believed, and these are sources inside of their intelligence, their military, stuff like that, say it's believed to be a complete accident. That does not mean it was an accident in a firecracker warehouse. However, as more information has come out, it appears that the initial information that was provided seems roughly true, because if you take a look at this video from before the massive explosion, you can see what definitely looked to be fireworks going off.
Right.
That person could have been blown off that balcony.
Wow.
So, yeah, you see a ton of little mini explosions.
Away.
They were pretty far, yeah. But you can see also there, it's in a port. New information coming out implies that it was potentially a ship loaded with fireworks or things like that docking in a place where they're stored. And the thing is, while it seems crazy, a warehouse filled with fireworks is effectively a warehouse filled with gunpowder, effectively. And if there was a fire, it could have lit those off. It could have set off some sort of gas main or something like that. There are a lot of things that could potentially explode. There have been massive warehouse and chemical plant explosions in the U.S. that have been very, you know, scary as well in recent years. We do believe, according to NBC News, there were images of people trapped under rubble, some bloodied.
Oh my God.
And I have heard, you know, prior to us going live, maybe it's been confirmed since, that there are deaths, although I don't know that those have been officially acknowledged. I had done a
search and I wasn't able to find those numbers either, but it's horrific that people were so hurt. I was hoping that because there was a fire preceding the explosion, that people were able to get away.
That was exactly my hope too. But my source says that there are deaths. I don't know that they've been numbered or acknowledged publicly yet, but it's possible that that has happened in the last hour while we've been filming. But anyway, even if this is everything that they say it is, a complete accident, it looks like people have lost their lives and been injured. It must have been terrifying for people living in that city. Obviously, a city with a long history of really tragic
unrest.
Violence of this sort of unrest. You know, so feel awful.
So you don't think, John, I mean, I know that there have been protests going on. Obviously, you know, my first reaction was like, okay, is this related to that? But you're saying no relation at all.
I mean, look, I am not an expert in this area. I am being connected with an expert working in Beirut that's going to come on the show. I am naturally cynical. However, people I trust who are far better experts in that region than me say that this is not connected to
ongoing issues there. Accidents happen.
But we don't know. This is what we're just reporting, the initial information. Maybe we'll find out more, you know, in the near future. It's enough of a tragedy as of right now. Perhaps it will turn out to have been an even worse one. And people in the chat I see a few people talking about Halifax, apparently a munitions ship docked, blew up, and leveled the city effectively. So it has, well, that's obviously far larger, but similar sort of situation. Yeah, just terrifying.
Well,
I imagine looking out your window.
I will watch your interview tomorrow.
Thank you. despite the fact that we have had literally months of never-ending protests all across the country that have been trying to draw attention to the mistreatment of black and brown individuals by the police, that has not seemingly stopped that sort of behavior from continuing. I want to show you a bit of footage. It is extremely disturbing. It shows a family in Aurora that has been pulled out of their vehicle because of a apparent belief that hadn't even been checked that the vehicle was stolen, and this is how the family was treated. So, look, there's extended video online, but the family is laid out on a parking lot, like, just on the pavement, crying. Family, including young kids.
It hurts me to watch, John. I tear up when I watch that video. To hear the agony and the pain in their voices and their children. This is traumatizing for life, not only for this family, but for any of us watching it. You're, to say that we don't have institutional, systemic racism, that there isn't bias by the police, that police brutality against black people is not real. I mean, look, show me one white family that this has happened to, please. I'll wait, because a baby was on the asphalt. Children were handcuffed. For what? The story is what, that this woman had reported her car stolen like months before?
Mm-hmm.
And it was cleared up within days. And then months later, they have her whole family traumatizing them. And the cops realize, I mean, this, it reminded me of like times of slavery, the insensitivity and just treating them like they're nobody, like they're not humans. This is horrific to watch. It really upset me when I saw this last night.
Yeah, it does. I mean, sometimes don't you just want to like sit down with an individual police officer and ask, what did you think the kid was going to do if you just let the kid stand there while you handcuffed everybody? Like, did you think the kid was going to grab your gun and kill all the cops? Did you think the kid was going to overpower you?
She was six.
It's children. It's a six-year-old girl. Six-year-old girl needs to be on the ground. They're trained. And they think, well, I guess they're trained to think, that six-year-old needs to be handcuffed and on the ground.
They're afraid of black people. And I don't care what color the cop is. They're afraid of black people because they're being trained to be afraid of black people.
Yeah.
Not just by the police department, which is, and it can be, it's nationwide. It goes back to us being a nation based on white supremacy.
Yeah.
So you're automatic. It just feels right to be afraid. And when you're trained and brainwashed as a cop to be following blindly orders, you have to have some sort of moral backbone and say, we're not going to do it like this. And I would automatically call someone that's ahead of this guy in charge who's making these decisions to lay this family on the asphalt. It is the summer on top of it.
Yeah.
Face down on asphalt. We all remember from elementary school how hot that is because we used to sit our butts on it all the time.
Exactly. Yeah.
It's inhumane.
And as you alluded to, in terms of the situation, so they're in a parking lot. They're approached by the cops. The cops think that the car is stolen, mistakenly, which we'll get to. They take all the people. They don't just like say, hey, could you just hold a second? We need to run this or anything or something. They immediately force them all to the ground. Okay, they tell her that her car is stolen. She says that it had been stolen in February, but it was cleared up. She tells them that and says, I will show you the vehicle registration and insurance paperwork. That's not good enough for them. So they make her wait on the ground. Her attorney emphasized to CNN that the vehicle was stolen in February. It was returned to her the next day by the Aurora police. They already, that department returned the car and then apparently decided, maybe in a couple of months we'll stop her again and throw her on the ground. And maybe your kids too. The treatment, both in terms of the callous individual treatment on the day, but the lack of care about the inconvenience and all that, doing this in public, making the kid, like I've never had that happen to me. Imagine as a six-year-old being forced to do that.
But black and brown people have it happen to them every single day.
Exactly.
And it should be illegal to handcuff children. And the other, it was a woman and her two nieces or something. One was 16, one was 17. Underage, minors. It should be illegal to handcuff them.
Yeah.
If they identify themselves as minors, then they should have just set them aside. What were they going to do? It just makes no sense. All of these people need to be removed from duty. They are dangerous, menaces to society. They need to not be wearing a badge. They are not peace officers. They are terrorists. What they did is terrorism. They terrorized this family and all of us who had to watch that and endure that, to hear the wailing and the crying. I mean, I get goosebumps even just thinking about it again. It is horrific.
And like, it's horrific that you could ever have just done what we saw, but that so many cops and individuals could go through all of this year, not just the protests, constantly calling attention to this sort of bias and mistreatment and brutality and murder is happening, and constantly reminding people that that's what's been going on, but also the pandemic, where we're all scared for our lives, we're supposed to be pulling together, that you could get through all of that and still be cruel and brutal to people, whether you're a cop or an individual, that none of that has had any effect.
Here's what doesn't add up. They took Dylan Roof to Burger King.
Yeah.
It doesn't add up, John. What's happening? How does that make sense? And this makes sense. How? That guy murdered people, assassinated people. These guys, maybe that woman stole a car. Maybe. First of all, she has a car full of children. Mm-hmm. That is not how to handle it. Let her show you the paperwork. Exactly. Take it from there. Obviously, they don't do their job, because maybe in the record, they should have done their paperwork and shown that their car was returned and the matter was resolved. So somebody effed up. And who paid for it? A six-year-old baby girl with her face in the asphalt. Well, she now feels like that is how this government treats her, this city treats her, the police treat her. She will forever be marked. And they want us to celebrate blue lives and protect blue lives. You're not protecting the very people you are charged to protect. You're terrorizing them. Are there cops that are out there saving lives and doing this? Of course. But we don't need to qualify that. Mm-hmm. That's what they're supposed to be doing.
Yeah.
That's like getting a D- and putting it on the fridge again. Oh, well, we saved a cat. Okay, well, guess what? You're really hurting people. You murdered Breonna Taylor. You put this little baby down in the dirt. It's just, we need to just stop. This is why defund the police. This is why abolish the police is a rallying cry. It doesn't mean we don't need some sort of peace officers and someone to help enforce laws, et cetera, et cetera. But the system that we have set up that was based for slave patrol has turned into this, and it needs to be eradicated. We need to start from scratch.
I agree. Total reboot. Questioning all of the training, the organization, everything, the way the union protects them.
The uniforms, everything. Get rid of everything.
Progressive PAC Midas Touch has a new ad out pointing out the history of Donald Trump's interactions with reporters of a particular type. They're female, and he doesn't like it.
Nobody respects women more than I do.
Do you have any questions?
I have two questions.
No, it's okay. Next, please.
But you called on me.
I love women. I cherish women.
She's shocked that I picked her.
I'm not thinking, Mr.
That's
President.
Okay. I know you're not thinking. You never do.
I'm sorry?
I have great respect for women.
What a stupid question. But I watch you a lot. You ask a lot of stupid questions.
The way he treats the female reporters is different.
Sit down. You know you're a fake. You know that.
Caitlin Collins was banned from a late afternoon press event because the White House didn't like the question she asked the president.
Women, I love the women. April Ryan, you talk about somebody that's a loser.
You're so disgraceful.
That's a racist question.
Keep your voice down.
I'm not responding to you. I'm talking to this gentleman.
The way he reacts is different, and I think it's time to say so.
Yeah.
That was a lot of them. I remembered some of those, but man, there's been a lot of interactions like that over just a couple of years.
So many, yeah. On a production note, I think the music was too loud, but I guess it evoked a lot of people.
That's true. I didn't make it.
I know.
You
would have done a much better job.
Thank you.
Yeah, I mean, he hates women. I don't know that he's afraid of them. He hates them. He doesn't have any respect for them. He doesn't have any respect for anybody who's more intelligent than him. So all of these women that he's interacting with who are obviously, you know, in the positions that they're in because they're highly intelligent people, he's threatened by anybody who gets higher than D minus.
I mean, I guess, look, I would say afraid, but I mean sort of like what you were just saying about being threatened. I think that he has a lot in common with incels, and I don't care how much sex he's had in his life, he is an incel through and through. And it has to do with the negative, dark collection of views you have of women, and how afraid you are that they'll reject you, that they'll judge you, that they'll mock you, that they'll make you feel as small as you feel. The fear that those things will happen, that he obviously does, he doesn't want to be challenged by anyone, that's true. But I think he especially does not want to be challenged by a woman because also he does not respect them. He thinks that women are for a couple of different things. He doesn't like that they're in that room in the first place. And now they're daring to ask him tough questions. I think he can't take that.
Yeah.
And he can't hide it.
He's quick to insult women because he already hates them. He's a total misogynist, probably proud to be one. And so he's quick to put them down. Oh, yeah, you never make sense. You never. It's like stupidity. You know, back to him being an incel, let me ask you this. Do you think he's having sex now?
I guess fundamentally I don't care, but I find it hard to believe. I would doubt it.
I would say poor Melania, but she brought this on herself.
She did. She's horrible. I don't care, but I doubt it.
He's attacked women. He specifically attacks women of color.
Yeah.
Because he thinks they're even lower. I don't think that he believes women need to be in positions of power. However, when he does put sort of tokens around him so he can sort of say, here, I have a black friend, I have women on my cabinet, you know, so he does place them strategically around him when it's convenient for him. We have a Spanish, you know, cuando conviene, when it works for him. When the statistics work for him, when it's good to have a woman or a black person. I mean, he's, you know, Herman Cain passed away. He was on his list of black people he knew. Now that's a shorter list. So I don't know. This guy, we could talk about his insecurities our whole lives, but he has a lot of problems. He's a narcissist, a misogynist, insecure, imbecile, most likely. He says he reads a lot. In that interview, he said he reads.
And he comprehends better than anyone.
He's the best.
Yeah.
It's upsetting. But, you know, I think women have been used to being treated as secondhand citizens a lot. So I, at least when I watch something like that, I don't get offended because it's like a clown telling me I'm a clown. And it's like, which one's wearing the makeup? That's orange.
That's true.
I think that even the White House correspondents, you know, they kind of are like used to it at this point. But it's shocking to see a president act in this way.
Yeah.
You know, I think Nixon was pretty misogynistic, and I think he even didn't things like this.
That's true. And there's stuff that they didn't even fit into that. I mean, there was one reporter, I think she's with, is it Washington Post? Wei Zhejiang? I don't remember exactly. But he basically implied that she should go back to China. So the racism as well. Anyway, they didn't make this ad, and I don't make this video hoping to get through to Trump and make him question his misogyny that has been, like, if he has a backbone, it's racism and misogyny twisted together. That's the double helix. No, I'm not going to get through to him. Like, if you are watching this and you're a young guy, and especially if you're a young guy who thinks that you're a conservative or should be, there are a lot of movements. They're trying to fool you into thinking that developing this sort of hatred towards women is empowering and will make you more successful. That is as stupid as it sounds. And I know that you're young and you probably won't trust me anyway, but that's the literal worst way that you could live your life for a lot of different reasons, both in terms of its effect on other people, especially women, but also in terms of your own life satisfaction. Don't be Trump when it comes to women. Don't follow those guys. There are other ways.
I know there's a lot of men that fall into that incel category, and I understand it's difficult to date out there. I'm single myself, and I'm not a misandrist, which is the opposite of misogynist, by the way. I love men. I love people, and I don't attribute one negative thing to the whole gender. It makes no sense. So it's really hard because putting yourself out there and being vulnerable, you know, I'm talking about the incels that tend to lead towards that way. I think they just want to feel powerful, and this mystique of machismo gives you that false sense. But you said it right, John. It's the wrong way to go. You don't want to be him.
Yeah.
You don't.
Exactly.
And so Melania doesn't even want to hold his hand.
No, she doesn't. Would you want to? Oh, imagine what it would feel like. Simultaneously sweaty and too dry.
And small.
And small, yeah. Yeah, Brian Watson pointed out in reference to one of the quotes he had in that video, it's that there's a big difference between loving women and loving women's bodies. That's not actually the same thing. Not long ago, almost on cue, Donald Trump floated the possibility of delaying the election, something that he has no power to do, but it's America and it's 2020, so let's see what happens. And joining us now to talk about that possibility and other issues that might crop up as we move towards this general election, we're joined by a senior contributor to Millennial Politics, as well as a Democratic strategist, Max Burns. Welcome to the Damage Report.
Thanks for having me.
Glad to have you on, although I wish we could be talking about something more positive. So when you initially saw the president's tweet about the fact that, you know, we might have to delay the election, what was your reaction?
Initially, it was tough to figure out if this is just Donald Trump having a moment on the toilet and saying something to get attention, or if this is something to really be concerned about, because we've seen seemingly outlandish things the president has said before actually become functional law, no matter what courts say, no matter what Congress says. So you can't really sleep on any threat that Donald Trump makes to the integrity of our elections.
Yeah, and I guess it always comes down to, especially when it's this sort of thing that sort of strikes at the heart of our democracy, separation of powers and all the checks and balances and all of that. As soon as he tweeted it, all of the fact checks came in. Well, you know, technically he doesn't control when the election is, which is certainly true. But then the follow-up question then becomes, does it matter that he has no direct ability to do that? Would that actually stop him? Those sorts of fears. Do you have those sorts of fears, or do you think that in the end, you know, he can make the sort of the blustery claims that he wants, but the system is what the system is, and you expect it'll go along as currently scheduled?
I think if we look at the graveyard of political history, a lot of democracies and representative countries have suffered the last words of, he can't do that legally. We waive the law and we waive the Constitution in front of a political party that has shown it does not care, that accumulating power and perpetuating the Republican majority is the only goal, and anything will justify achieving that goal. So what we need to do is work together and make sure that there are not legal or illegal ways that Trump could pressure people into delaying or meddling with this election.
Yeah. So you know what, let's widen the scope then. So we're talking about delaying the election, but that is certainly not the only way that Trump could, or perhaps is already trying to, interfere with or change or call into question the election. What are some of the other ways that you've been noticing or that you believe are worth scrutiny?
Well, the big one that we've seen recently is making this false distinction between absentee voting and mail-in voting, and implying that the post office can't handle the flow of mail-in votes. They've said that would be no problem, implying that it's rife with fraud. That is completely unproven. In fact, the only voter fraud case related to mail-in ballots we've seen in recent history is a Republican who attempted to change ballots to support President Trump. And there's just no evidence that this is, but then again, the same with
it's
these
perfect.
Threats. It is, it's the same with these threats to delay the election. The whole goal isn't to actually stop the election, it's to sow doubt, to damage the credibility of the election, and to sort of inspire his soldiers to fight on in the event that he loses.
Yeah, you know, since he started attacking the mail-in voting, you know, I've been worried about that because we're in a pandemic and we need it. And also mail-in voting has been around for, you know, a century and a half. For some states, it's how they do things for literally decades. It seemed like it was a weird thing to attack. But then also, I saw some polls in the initial weeks or so after he began these attacks showing that in Texas, for instance, Republicans were far less likely to say they would take part in mail-in voting, perhaps because they've been told that it's fraudulent. It would seem to be a weird strategy to try to undermine the chance that your own voters will use this tool. And I don't know if you saw this tweet just about 2 hours ago. He seems to be trying to finesse his messaging, tweeting, whether you call it vote by mail or absentee voting, in Florida, the election system is safe and secure, tried and true. Florida's voting system has been cleaned up. So in Florida, I encourage all to request a ballot and vote by mail. Is that gonna work? Like,
yeah,
I've chosen a few states where I want you to.
Nobody can run an election like Florida. I think we've seen that in history. They've nailed it historically. But you're absolutely right. The president's concern about mail-in voting seems to track the polls more than any actual data. We've seen in states where Democrats are ahead in early registration, or the president is underwater in the polls, those are the places he says have the voting problems. But Texas, Mississippi, Georgia. It's great to go out and vote by mail there. The president does it himself. And I think a lot of people see through the transparent cynicism of this play.
Yeah. And look, we can't divorce this conversation about what form voting should come in from the fact that we are currently in a pandemic. It's worse than it was a month ago. And for all we know, in 94 or so days, it could be even worse. And if it is, and if people are forced to go and vote in person, that is going to be disastrous for older voters, many of them Republicans. That doesn't appear to be giving him any pause that striking back against mail-in voting could end up hurting, perhaps fatally hurting his own voters. Do you think that that could eventually get through to him if his advisors make a big point of wanting to protect people who, you know, they wear the red cap, they're MAGA all the way, and their lives might be on the line on November 3rd?
Well, if this Axios interview is any indication, President Trump can't really be pressured into caring about anyone's life or death. He says, with regards to the people dying of this pandemic, that it is what it is. In a lot of ways, it seems like the president and his campaign have sort of resigned themselves to trying to turn out as many of their 38% as they can, and then to win by just hook or crook, suppressing the vote where they can, banning mail-in where they can, and making it almost impossible for anyone else to vote against him.
Yeah. You know, I know that you tweeted recently, just a couple of weeks ago, about how calling into question the results nationally seems like the strategy, but he might not need to do that nationally, that he might be able to target it a bit more and get a lot of mileage out of that. Could you explain that theory?
Yeah, exactly. And one of the views that people have said in minimizing Trump's threats are that he's never going to get Andrew Cuomo to suspend Election Day in New York. They hate each other. Mm-hmm. But the truth is, he doesn't need 50 states to stop holding this election in order to throw the entire day into chaos. All he would need to do is ask Florida's Governor Ron DeSantis to withhold the election day due to COVID threats or due to election fraud. And we've seen that the same Republicans who are willing to put kids in cages for Trump, who are willing to open their states against all medical advice for Trump, would have no problem delaying an election because the president said it was unsafe.
Yeah, you know, I guess, it seems like a reasonable fear that if you have a combination of a few variables, if you have an incumbent president who in theory, if not in law, could exert pressure on the election a number of different ways, and if they're like seemingly down by quite a bit going into a re-election bid, that they might want to put pressure on the system. Have we had other examples of that? And in those cases, did the presidents do anything sort of in this area, sort of scary moves that seem fundamentally anti-democratic?
I mean, this is really unprecedented territory. We have to go all the way back to Samuel Tilden and Rutherford B. Hayes at the end of the 19th century to see parties that were so openly involved in trying to manipulate ballots. And now we have the president of the United States advocating manipulating the US code so that state legislatures that don't hold elections can decide who their electors go to. And it makes you wonder who the GOP majority in Florida will choose, even if Joe Biden got more votes.
Yeah. So you've laid out a lot of different fears. I share many or perhaps all of them. What could be done in theory? Could the Senate or could state legislators, could governors do something to reassure the people living in their states that the election will happen as, you know, legally mandated, that it will be fair, that the results will be reliable? What could they do? And do you think that those things will actually be done?
There are things we can do, and I think in a lot of ways we're already doing them. This presidency, more than any other, has really reminded voters that the power in this government comes from people. And people putting pressure on state legislators, on governors, has had a real positive effect in sort of curbing the worst excesses of Trumpism. What we need now is for people to get out in the streets, to write letters, to make calls, getting a commitment from their state legislatures and their governors that Election Day will be November 3rd, no matter what President Trump tries to do. And if we can get them on the record, perhaps maybe there's still a little shame left in them to honor the constitutional mandates that keep our democracy functioning.
Look, I certainly hope. It seems like it's gonna be an exciting run up to the election. Perhaps we can check in a little bit later on and see what the newest bid to change how our democracy works will be. But we appreciate you joining us. Max Burns, Democratic strategist and senior contributor for Millennial Politics. Thank you for joining us on the show today.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to the full episode of The Damage Report. Support our work, listen ad-free, access members-only bonus content, and more by subscribing to Apple Podcasts at apple.co/TYT. I'm your host, John Adirola. I'll see you soon.